Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 4th day of January, our first All Things Political of the year 2016. And our guest this hour is Bob Franken. Bob is a veteran news journalist. He's worked for CBS, CNN. He's a frequent guest now on MSNBC. He writes a weekly column, Frankincense Blog, which is syndicated by King Features. And he has covered both wars in Iraq. He spent about a month embedded with the Army all over that country. He got his first radio job in Marshfield, Wisconsin. We always like to mention that. And he is a graduate of UW-Madison. Off and running with All Things Political, we have a lot to talk about this hour. The president is soon very likely to issue executive orders that will expand background checks for gun purchasers. We'll ask what else he could do in his final year in office with executive power. Donald Trump. Bob has written a lot about Donald Trump. He's the leader among the GOP presidential candidates. Few people thought he still would be, but he is. And his anti-Muslim build a wall ads will begin tomorrow in Iowa and New Hampshire. The Oregon militia standoff continues, as you heard during the news, with armed militiamen taking over a building at a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service refuge to protest the extension of prison terms for two ranchers who were convicted for setting fire to federal lands. Hillary Clinton will be campaigning with Bill Clinton in New Hampshire and Iowa. Allies of Saudi Arabia are scaling down their diplomatic ties to Iran. And much more we'll be talking about this hour with Bob and welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Bob. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's going to be a year, sir.
As if last year was not.
I know, but we're going to elect a president. Well, let's start. I can't believe how much I've had to talk about this man, but let's start with Donald Trump, who still is standing.
We had to start, huh, with Donald.
I'm sorry, but I just read what you wrote about him, and you had some pretty tough things to say, so I thought you wouldn't mind starting there.
I've probably written more about him than I have anything else in 2015, so it looks like at least for a while he's going to dominate things in 2016, at least until Iowa.
Mm-hmm. And in one of the pieces you wrote recently, you say what we're hearing from none of the Republicans is a definitive indication that if Trump was their nominee, they would repudiate him and support the Democrat, presumably Hillary Clinton. They have said some things about him, but nobody has said, have you no shame, sir?
Well, you know, we've gotten to the point where craven politicians has become something of a redundancy. There was a time in the 80s or 90s, I wrote about this, where Edwin Edwards, who was a rogue Louisiana politician, if there ever was one, as corrupt as the day is long, he ended up going to prison. At any rate, he was running for what his fourth term for governor. The Republicans, he was a Democrat, the Republicans put up David Duke. Do you remember him?
I sure do.
Yeah, the Ku Klux Klan. At any rate, some of the honorable Republicans before the election put out a bumper sticker which said, vote for the crook. It's important. So now we come to Donald Trump, and there are any number of Republicans who are bad-mouthing him, who are appalled by Donald Trump's tactics and all that. These are the same ones who basically say that Hillary Clinton is dishonest. And so I'm waiting at some point, if Trump is the nominee, for them to put out a bumper sticker saying, vote for the liar. It's important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that in this day and time they would do that.
I'm wondering, I was having dinner a few days ago with people who normally vote Republican, and they're very upset about Donald Trump. And I was wondering, among those, Bob, who consider themselves more moderate Republicans, if he is the nominee, do they just sit out the election, or do they vote for him?
Well, I suspect that many of them would choose to sit out the election, but they would do so quietly. And that is a problem that we have in politics today, whichever party. And that is that people no longer have the courage of their convictions because if they express their convictions, chances are they're going to be creamed in the next primary. That's particularly true now with the Republican Party, which has become much more conservative. But to a certain extent, it's also true in the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. What about Paul Ryan? You wrote about him trying to cast himself as an enlightened conservative, but his response, I'm going to support whoever the Republican nominee is.
Right. And, of course, Paul Ryan is from Janesville, Wisconsin. We can never forget that. This is somebody who is trying to present himself as the new kind of politician, a very thoughtful man. But among the things that he would have to consider is the direction of the country if, in fact, we would have a Donald Trump presidency. But it's far too early for him to be placed into a situation where he has to declare that he's anything but a loyal Republican. But down the road, I suspect that he's going to agonize over it if Donald Trump is the nominee.
So, Bob, why is Donald Trump still standing?
Donald Trump is standing for a couple of reasons. First of all, the man knows media. This man knows media. He's spending, really, his first money on campaign ads, but he's basically gotten free advertising,
right,
because he just knows how to pull our chains and realize that we're not going to miss the story, as outlandish as some of his stuff is. So we're going to report it and give him publicity, and because he's a rating magnet, we're going to put it on the air. There's that. But the other thing is, he's appealing to the fact that in this country, a large number of people are justifiably angry. They're angry because they have been had, this is just the fact of the matter, they've been had in the last couple of decades for almost a generation by the wealthy, the one percenters, whatever you want to talk about. And Donald Trump knows that these people are looking for easy solutions to answer their desperation, is frankly what it amounts to.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he is very, very good at pressing those kinds of buttons. Now, some people might say that this parallels what happened in Germany in the 1930s.
Would you say that?
I would say that there are some elements of it. I don't think that we are seeing the kind of hatred particularly directed at one group, that is to say in Germany it was the Jews, but we're seeing somebody that is almost approaching that when it comes to various groups that are somewhat disadvantaged, by whom I mean Mexicans, particularly illegal immigrants, and for that matter, legal immigrants, and of course, Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the New York Times article on his brother yesterday?
On his what?
On Donald Trump's brother.
I did. It was fascinating.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, his brother Fred. Yeah.
Yeah, and how?
Yeah, and Donald and Fred, for those of us who didn't read the New York Times, and I'm sure there are one or two people out there.
Just one.
his brother Fred was his older brother and was much more happy-go-lucky, much more the rebel. And they had a very, very stern father who demanded that they keep their nose to the grindstone and all that kind of thing. And because of the fact that his father probably was not proud of him, Fred became an alcoholic. And Donald Trump was very forthcoming in the article, including the fact, and he died, by the way, as an alcoholic at a very young age, 43. But Donald Trump was very forthcoming about the fact that he said that was the reason that he doesn't smoke and doesn't drink.
Mm-hmm. But it also had these things to say that his son and his son's children were cut out of the will, and one of the children had cerebral palsy, and that Trump was instrumental in sort of changing the will to make sure that that side of the family got no money from the father.
Yeah, but Trump explained that a little bit later in the article, saying that there was a legal settlement down the road, and as he put it, everybody was quite happy with the settlement. So, quite frankly, I don't know the facts around it. I just found it intriguing because it was a window into Donald Trump a little bit, who is somebody who's really, for the most part, somebody who's been mainly a performer for as long as we've really known about him.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton for a moment, and Bill Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Evidently, she's going to be using Bill Clinton on the campaign trail in both Iowa and New Hampshire. Why, and is it wise?
Well, the answer to the last question is we'll see. But the reason why to use him is because he maintains and retains among Democrats quite a strong, strong following, particularly now that he's out of office. And, of course, she will be making the point that when he was president, the nation suffered relative prosperity as opposed to what happened after that. The reason that some people think it's unwise is because it's a reminder that Bill Clinton had his own women problems, to put it mildly. Donald Trump has already been teeing off on that. There are any number of us who feel that if he's out there, that is fair game. If she's going to be using him as the spokesperson, particularly when she's accusing Donald Trump of sexism and misogyny, which are probably unarguable, here you have Bill Clinton who has his own problems with that.
And he will certainly use that. He already has.
Oh, yeah, he has. And as a matter of fact, many columnists in Washington, and I'm one of them, but Ruth Marcus is the most notable one, with the Washington Post say, hey, he's fair game.
The president, last year in office, which is hard to believe, evidently, I don't know how soon this will happen, but he met with the attorney general today, evidently on expanded background checks for gun purchasers. And I'm wondering if that will face a substantial legal challenge, if he can do that, and what else he might do in the last year via executive power.
Well, of course, the executive power of the president is both awesome and at the same time is very limited. Obviously, Congress has quite a bit of a say on the creation of laws in this country, but the president has tried to use executive powers, and most notably, he was trying to loosen the enforcement against illegal immigrants in this country, and ended up having the courts say, no, you can't do that, at least so far. That's now before the Supreme Court. But in the case of gun control, what he is trying to do, and it would seem that he might have a better chance of doing this, what he is trying to do is to say that, okay, we're going to make at least have more people have to go and have background checks before they can purchase a gun. And he's aiming it at, in effect, the part-time gun merchants. Those are the people who go to gun shows and sell guns and all that type of thing. And he's going to make it much, much more difficult for them to sell a gun without a background check. They're going to have to, in fact, sell a gun if they advertise. They're going to have a background check if they advertise. They're going to have a background check if they sell more than, I think the figure is 50 guns a year. All of this is being discussed and has been discussed for a long time before the president has decided to take action. His meeting with the attorney general was probably just the last step in this process before he issues the executive orders. In that period of time, they have really dotted their I's and crossed their T's legally to come up with a way they think is going to fly legally. However, you can bet that there's going to be litigation, and the question is going to be whether some judge says that the executive action has to be stopped until it goes through the courts, which would probably mean it would be by the end of the presidency.
Do you think he's been a good president, mediocre, excellent?
Well, in answer to your question, yes.
Old Bob.
But this is the reporter in me speaking. I was probably in 2008, when he ran for the first time, one of the few reporters who said, hey, wait a minute, folks, we're not here to be his propagandists. We are here to, in fact, do our job reporting on what he's done. But in answer to your question, the progressives would certainly say that he has accomplished much of what he promised to promise. He cleared the way for gay marriage to become, in effect, legal in the United States. He got a health care law passed that many people say is at least a step in the right direction. That kind of thing. He has had the right enemies oftentimes, that being the conservatives. So that's what the progressives say. The progressives also say that he hasn't done enough, that he's been too timid, that he has oftentimes been too professorial. He hasn't really gotten into the political process, dealing with his political enemies in Congress, and gotten his hands dirty. So the answer, as I said, is yes and yes.
Bob Franken is our guest for All Things Political. We want to talk about the Oregon militia standoff, which is continuing, but I've noticed that our first caller would like to address that, so we'll wait and take that call in just a moment. And welcome your other phone calls as well. Here's how you reach our first All Things Political for 2016 with Bob Franken. The number 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. We're talking about Donald Trump, who remains the front runner on the Republican side. Do you think that, considering what his rhetoric has been, a lot of people think he is a very dangerous candidate? Do you think that the Republican, other candidates and Republicans have said, wait a second, you've gone too far? Or maybe some of you think that he hasn't gone too far. Does it behoove Hillary Clinton to have her husband Bill campaign with her in Iowa and in New Hampshire because people still like him? Or does he open himself up to charges of his conduct with women? Do we have to hear about Monica Lewinsky again? Because you can be sure that Donald Trump will be bringing that up. And we'll talk about Bernie Sanders. Is he mounting a campaign that may throw Hillary off or not at this point because she's amassed so much money and so much support? We'll talk about allies of Saudi Arabia scaling down their diplomatic ties to Iran and what that does to our fighting ISIS. And what about fighting ISIS in 2016, making sure that terrorism doesn't hit American shores? And what do we do about fighting ISIS in Iraq and in Syria? Does anybody have a plan? So we'll go to your phone calls. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Franken is here now, and it's all things political for 2016. So let's get it rolling and give us a call with some of the stories we've talked about and whatever else you'd like to bring up. 800-486-8655 is the number. Claire in Madison is our first caller, Bob. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I am so fascinated by this whole news coverage of this Bundy group out there in Oregon. Let's review. Mr. Cliven Bundy was letting his cattle graze. All the other ranchers were paying the feds for that right, but he refused to pay, and he owes, what is it, $1.5 million or something in fees for that he refuses to pay. Now they've started fires in national parks, and they've taken over buildings or a building, and they're armed. And it's all just, oh, well, you know, it's not that big a deal, apparently. If these were black people, or for that matter, Native Americans doing this, the National Guard would be there. People would be up in arms about these crazy people. But apparently because they're white, it's, well, we're trying to figure out how to handle this. And these people are terrorists. They're deadbeats, and they're terrorists.
Bob.
Well, there's quite a bit of feeling about that, and there's some evidence that the police response sometimes when there have been black protesters have been very harsh, but, you know, Ferguson, Missouri, wherever you want to turn. However, these people, it seems, are a little pathetic. If I could just make a factual correction here, Claire, they are not the ones who are setting the fires in the national park. What happened was is that father and son ranch owners by the name of the Hammonds had burned some brush and were charged with arson, served some time in prison, and got out, and then a judge said they hadn't served enough time, so they were about to surrender, and as a matter of fact, have said repeatedly that they would peacefully surrender. However, in Oregon, in this remote area of Oregon, some militants had some militia people. Maybe I had a little Freudian slip when I said militants. In any case, they had decided that they would have a demonstration in support of the Hammonds. Then this group of the Bundys, they broke off and went and took over this federal property and all that, and now law enforcement is trying to decide what to do and trying to decide from the law enforcement point of view how to do this without major a number of deaths and all that kind of thing. Now, one thing that has happened with these people who have taken over the building, they are being ridiculed in public. They're just being laughed at. There are names that are coming up calling them like Vanilla ISIS because they're so white and calling them Y'all Qaeda. That kind of thing. They are being as I said, ridiculed. And maybe what they will end up doing is to bring such an amount of scorn by the American people that they will do more harm than good to their cause, which, by the way, is to overthrow the United States government, which is the kind of thing that they shouldn't be doing. One other thing, most of the Republican candidates have been very quiet about them. One exception, just very recently in the last couple of hours, has been Ted Cruz, who is saying they don't have a right to do what they're doing.
Thank you very much, Claire, for the call. And do you imagine, it must be kind of a tricky thing because people think about Waco, Texas, and where was the other place where something like this happened? And,
right. You don't want to create martyrs.
Right. Yeah. So negotiating this because you're dealing with people who are militant and say they're willing to die for this cause, it's sort of hard to figure out what to do with them.
Yeah, well, apparently, I was reading somewhere that they might not make it through the year that they were promising to be there, if necessary. They've apparently already run out of food, and they're asking for people to send snacks to them.
Oh, they have.
Yeah.
Send snacks to them, right.
Yeah, and my guess is that even though they're in a national forest, they're probably not all that adept in living off the land.
Yeah. Let's go to Tom next. Hi, Tom.
Oh, hi. I just thought, a little context. Mr. Franken had brought up David Duke. David Duke is over the past several months has praised Donald Trump for touching on subjects that are near and dear to his heart. But as you know, recently in December, it said, "Let me get the quote here." I don't agree with everything he says. He speaks a lot more radically than I talk, and I think that's a positive and a negative. I think the press doesn't really express how, white nationalist Trump is. And
oh,
I think Republicans
true.
That are silent about it are they need these voters.
Yes, you're right about the second one, or at least that's the perception, that when we talk about a Republican base, there are some people who are really far to the right. And I would suspect that almost all the Donald Trump supporters are Republicans, although there are some who say that there might be a few of the old, what you used to call Reagan Democrats, in other words, very conservative Democrats and all that kind of stuff. But in fact, the Republican Party, a big chunk of the Republican Party, is what they call the base. And the base is made up of people who are hard right to extreme right.
And is it 40%?
Is what 40%? The base?
The base, 40% Trump supporters.
Well, I can't say that, and probably nobody else can say that too. And probably some of the quote base supporting Mike Huckabee. Certainly, some of the quote base is supporting Ted Cruz. He's basically, in his much more polished way, going after the same voters, mm-hmm. The evangelicals and that kind of thing. But there are a lot of angry people in this country. I emphasize they are justifiably angry, but they are people who, particularly who are not the ones who are not well-educated, who are very susceptible to demagoguery. And let's call it what it is. Mm-hmm. What we're hearing from Donald Trump is demagoguery.
And what about Tom's point that there hasn't been from the press much condemnation of Trump's rhetoric?
Well, again, in the edit, the commentators, the people who write opinions and that kind of thing, including yours truly, have spent an awful lot of time on talking about just that.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, you said before, to my chagrin, that I probably wrote just about almost sometimes exclusively about Donald Trump, but it was certainly not to compliment him, mm-hmm. not certainly to offer his perspective. However, when it comes to the working press, that is to say the news reporters and all that type of thing, their job is to just report and provide some perspective and context, but for the most part, leave it to the commentators to do exactly what I think we've done.
The other thing that's troublesome to me, just as somebody who has to listen to this all the time, and you as well, Bob, is that you've got this person who, there's no substance behind what he's saying. It's top of his head, whatever comes out for reality television, sensational, and it gets tedious after a while, doesn't it? You want somebody who's well-informed, who understands history, who understands the complexity of this world, and we get none of that.
Well, no, we don't, and to be perfectly honest, that's what sells. Let us not forget that reality television is very popular in this country. The other thing that's really important is that it doesn't even matter if they're caught lying. People are basically so upset right now that they say, don't confuse me with the facts. I'm not concerned about that. The guy, I like what he has to say. I don't even care if it's true or not. Let's just, I'm going to support him.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom, very much for your call. We have lines open. We'd love to have you join us for our first All Things Political of 2016. Bob Franken is our guest this hour. He's a veteran news journalist. He has a weekly column, Frankincense Blog, which is syndicated by King Features, longtime reporter for CBS and CNN, frequent guest on MSNBC, and got his start in Marshfield, Wisconsin, on the radio, and went to UW-Madison. As we really now enter a big-time political year, we will elect a president during the course of this year. We've talked a lot about Donald Trump because he's still the front-runner. Are you surprised by that? What do you make of his rhetoric? Has he been challenged enough? Has he been challenged enough by leaders in the Republican Party? What about Hillary Clinton? What about Bill Clinton campaigning with Hillary Clinton? Is that a plus or a minus? Do you think that it's a foregone conclusion that she will be the nominee of the Democratic Party? And what do you make of that? What do you make of, somebody must have a thought about this, because heavens knows whenever we talk about guns, you have a lot to say about it. What do you think of the president meeting with the attorney general today on what could be an imminent announcement about expansion of background checks for gun purchasers, which is something that a great, great majority of American people are in favor of? The Oregon militia standoff continuing, nobody knowing exactly what to do there, so there will not be a loss of life. But what do you make of that? And we have yet to talk about what's going on in the Middle East, particularly, well, the latest news with Saudi Arabia cutting diplomatic ties to Iran, as are other allies of Saudi Arabia. We'd like to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And let's talk a bit about Saudi Arabia, Bob. Certainly one of the issues that will continue is, how do we fight ISIS? How do we keep events like San Bernardino from happening elsewhere in America? Now we've got this deal with Saudi Arabia and Iran and other Mideast countries now cutting their diplomatic ties to Iran. Does that complicate our efforts to fight ISIS? And what about our efforts to fight ISIS? Do we have a plan? How will it affect the campaign?
Well, it will affect the campaign by being an issue, particularly one with the Republicans, who will fairly or unfairly say that ISIS is a threat because of weak foreign policy on the part of President Obama. Weak foreign policy, weak defense posture, that type of thing. How do you fight ISIS? The administration would argue that it's a fighting ISIS in the most effective way it can. Very, very methodically, very slowly, with a still minimum of American troops in peril as they fight ISIS. It's a matter of training the Iraqis, etc., to go up against ISIS, which has been well-funded because it's been able to seize oil fields and, quite frankly, military equipment that was left behind, usually U.S. military equipment. They're a formidable force. One question would be, how in heaven's name were they able to spring up so suddenly without proper intelligence to nip their efforts in the bud way back then? Mm-hmm. But that's now water under the bridge. Now, moving on to the Saudi Arabia-Iran battle, that has always been the other underlying big problem in the Middle East. Of course, you have Israel and the Arab states and all of that, where we, of course, invest so much of our foreign policy and resources. But you've also always had the sectarian split between Iran in particular and Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a very conservative branch of Sunni Muslims, is that the government, the kingdom, is a very conservative, the kingdom is run by very conservative Sunni Muslims. And in this bitter split within Islam, you have the Shia Muslims, and they are the ones in control in Iran. And that becomes the basis for all of the foreign policy decisions that they make, particularly in the Mideast, and they're fighting proxy wars in a variety of countries, Yemen being one of them. It is a bitter, bitter rivalry. Remember, the Iranians are not really Arabs. They are Persians.
Mm-hmm.
And they speak a different language. They speak Farsi as opposed to Arabic. And all of that has been a long, bitter tension in the Middle East. And now it's just getting worse. And as a matter of fact, it might get to the point where it could explode into more violent confrontations there.
Mm. All right, back to phone calls. Let's go to Harry next. Hello, Harry.
Hi there.
Hi, Harry.
Why the news wire cut on Bernie Sanders? He just raised more money in a shorter period of time than even Barack Obama, and nobody's talking about him. Why is that?
Oh, I think we talk about him constantly. As a matter of fact, he is almost every week on one of the Sunday talk shows, something, by the way, that Hillary it is not. I think that because of the news coverage that he's gotten, he has succeeded because his name has been exposed and all that type of thing. The fact that he has raised the money that he's raised is something that has been reported by any number of people. I sort of bristle when I hear people say, oh, gee whiz, we're not paying any attention to Bernie Sanders. It must be some sort of conspiracy. Yeah, we're paying a lot of attention to Bernie Sanders, and rightfully so.
Why do you think the Democrats have put all of their debates on Saturday nights?
Because I'm among those who feel like it's sort of like the old Friday night dump when they would put out embarrassing documents
right.
on a Friday night, knowing that it wouldn't get much coverage. I think that the Democratic Party, particularly the chairwoman, are very much in Hillary Clinton's pocket. They want her to be the nominee. So the debates that they've scheduled, and there are just a few of them, are on a Saturday night when they would expect not to have many viewers.
So will it depend on Bernie's youthful supporters to get to the polls in large numbers for him to do well in the early caucus and primary states?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have a really good idea of whether he has any chance at all of being the nominee by New Hampshire. The Iowa caucus, I'm guessing, is not going to be friendly territory for him, although, you know, if the young people turn out, and that's his constituency, if they turn out, then maybe he'll surprise people. But in New Hampshire, that is where he might stand a chance. I mean, the guy is a New Englander. He's from neighboring Vermont. And if he's going to win anywhere, it would be in New Hampshire. And it's going to be interesting to see how well he does there. And if he doesn't do well there, then I think that his candidacy is probably in peril.
Right. Thank you, Harry, for the call. Mark in Appleton, hello.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Going back to Donald Trump, I mean, I think people are grossly underestimating, basically ignoring the impact of Fox News. I mean, you have a news network that is 24/7 vociferously against Obama. Most of what, there's so much inaccuracy and just downright untruths on the network. I mean, you had David Cameron finally calling them out on the no-go zones in London. They had the same nonsense about what in Paris. And when you have this kind of thing constantly, people believe Trump, or the truth no longer seems to matter because you have a news network that basically is allowed to just get away with, I guess they would call it opinion, but they're just so untrue. I mean, they have fostered this attitude that Obama is a Muslim, that Obama is unfaithful, that he's treasonous, he's a traitor, I mean, all of this stuff, which is deeply offensive. He was elected by the people. So, but I think it's something that's not noticed, and it's something new because we didn't have it before 2000, and certainly before 2008, after Obama was elected.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's accurate to say that people haven't noticed it. I mean, I think that there has been a massive amount written and talked about Fox News and its political orientation, and people who are not on the right have complained bitterly about the distortions. But I have to say that people who are on the right have also claimed about the place where I spend a lot of time, and that is MSNBC, saying you also get a one-sided view. What has changed over time is that you now have news organizations that are very, very blatantly, or at least transparently, one-sided in their point of view. You have MSNBC, which is to the left, and then you have Fox News, which is to the right. And you could probably argue that I'm understating that a little bit, but the point is that you have lost this idea, to a certain degree, that the journalist is supposed to be everybody's skeptic. I think that that has gone away a little bit, and I regret that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mark, for your call. Jim in La Crosse, hi. Hey, Jim, are you there? Well, it sounds like Jim is driving, so get to a place where you can call again, and we go to Jason next in Wisconsin. Hi, Jason.
Howdy.
Hi.
I got to say that I do agree with the whole polarization of the media outlets there. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I'd almost go so far as to say that's the one of the close to the root issues that we're experiencing today. The other is that we've fallen back to a two-party system that, because of media lack of media skepticism, it polarizes the public one way or the other on issues, when so many of these issues are so very much more granular than what's ever talked about or debated about for our presidential candidates.
Well, I think that, and I suspect you'll agree with me on this, I think part of the problem is that we don't really take the time, certainly not in television, to properly explore the various issues. We're all interested in the little soundbite. We're all interested in telling our story. We're ordered to tell our story in a minute 10, a minute 15, a minute 30, and no issue can be thoroughly explored in a minute 10, a minute 20,
no,
or a minute
not.
30, and no thought can properly be expressed in the 10 seconds or 8 seconds that we have of sound bites. And I think that that kind of mindset has affected the thinking of the American people, who now believe that they can understand an issue when somebody comes along, somebody like a Donald Trump, who in fact speaks in little sound bites.
I think one thing that could help with this is that if media outlets or the public in general would actually look at some of these independent parties that aren't Republican and aren't Democrat and look at them.
Are you thinking, for instance, the Green Party?
I vote for independent parties, even though I know there's no way that they're ever going to get in the office. I mean, I know if I vote for somebody who's not on the main two tickets, they're not going to get in the office.
I would have to say that there is a limited amount of news space or airtime available, and it you really can't spend a lot of time on some fragmentary party that really isn't going to be a player, that kind of thing. When an independent rises to the fore, for instance, Ross Perot, we paid quite a bit of attention to him. The same with George Wallace. I realize that he was not a glorious example, but nevertheless, we did pay attention to these people.
Well, let's go back to the sound bites for a moment. Are the people who run these operations thinking that we just don't want to hear more than about, 30 seconds or 1 minute per story, that we won't take it in, that we're too distracted by other things going on, our cell phones, et cetera? Or what is it?
Well, first of all, you have news consultants. This is not going to endear me to them, but they are basically just market research people.
Sure.
The kind of people who put together TV advertisements. They realized a long time ago that you have to get them in and get them out. In other words, you have to make your point and then get out. And what has happened is these same market research people have determined that you can get more viewers with concepts like if it bleeds, it leads. That is to say, if you can put every murder on in the book, people are going to watch in horror, but they're going to watch, as opposed to paying attention to a discussion about some hugely important issue of the day.
Mm-hmm. We welcome more phone calls. It's All Things Political, our first of 2016 this hour, and Bob Franken is our guest. Bob has joined us many times before in 2015 and before that. He's a veteran news journalist. He has worked for CBS, for CNN. He covered both wars in Iraq. He is frequently on MSNBC now, and he has a weekly column, Frankincense Blog, that is syndicated by King Features to newspapers all over the country. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. We love to read your comments on Facebook, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and if you like us there, you'll get notifications of the shows that we're having, because we'll have many really good ones in this presidential election year. And we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Franken is here now for All Things Political. Reed in Clintonville is our next caller. Hello, Reed.
Hello. Say, just two issues. The first one, I would fault, understanding that MSNBC and Fox News are very partisan, I would fault the rest of the media, especially media like, you know, the three, let's say, major news channels and others, that use Donald Trump as a vast money-making machine. They, I believe, are afraid to challenge him. They allow him to make blanket statements casually offhand that cannot be substantiated, and they use those statements in order to generate viewership and consequently to generate funds. And so their profit motive is the intent and not the benefit and betterment of the country. Secondly, Western Illinois University has accurately predicted the president in the last number of years. I don't know how many now, I've forgotten, but very accurate. I think they've been 100% accurate, and they have projected that Bernie Sanders would be the president. So I'd like to hear a comment from Mr. Franklin, or Franken. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Reed.
Well, it certainly will surprise the people outside Western Illinois University if that's the case. But, you know, stranger things have happened, and by saying strange, I'm not in any way deprecating Bernie Sanders, but this is a person who has some very revolutionary ideas, but these are times when those ideas may resonate. So I hate to say this, because you're never supposed to say this as a reporter. Only time will tell. but we're going to find something out within the next month or so, just how much traction that he has. As for what he was saying earlier about Donald Trump and the corporate news organizations looking for profit, be still my heart. I mean, this is nothing new. They are very hungry for ratings, and Donald Trump brings them ratings. However, I would disagree with his contention that we're just putting Donald Trump on the air and not challenging what he has to say. I mean, there has been any number of confrontations with Donald Trump. Megyn Kelly, of course, comes to mind. But there are any number of reporters who challenge him constantly. But he is somebody who has become a major force in American politics, whether we like it or not, and deserves quite a bit of coverage. So much coverage? Well, now we get into the ratings thing.
Well, and frequently you're watching a channel, a news channel, you think it's news, it's opinion, but they'll go to a Donald Trump rally and spend the next 35 minutes, and so we're listening to Donald Trump at one of his rallies.
Right. I mean, and that's because he is such a way of using show business tactics. I mean, the fact of the matter is his rallies are newsworthy. One of the problems that I've had with how we've sort of evolved in news is that we oftentimes give too much time to somebody who is going live. To be honest with you, that is something that was pioneered when I was at CNN. And that was always the problem. Yes, it was live, and yes, it was newsworthy, but we were still giving somebody a huge amount of time, whether that somebody is President of the United States, or if the people out in Oregon were going to hold a news conference, militia types out in Oregon. We would put them on the air live, too, and people would rightfully complain that, hey, we're giving these people who are just a fragment of our society too much time. But on the other side of that, there's the journalistic consideration that right now they're in the news, whether it's Donald Trump or the other wackos out there in Oregon, and they probably have earned the time.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Ann in La Crosse. Hello, Ann.
Hi, Kathleen. I've been listening to this conversation. I listen to you guys all the time. I listen to Wisconsin Republic Radio, or Wisconsin Radio all the time. And I'm just getting hotter and hotter listening to this because you're making Donald Trump out to be this idiot, but you don't understand. I feel like you guys are so naive to what people are really feeling in our state. People are sick and tired of the Democrats giving away the farm. We're the working stiffs here, but the Democrats are letting people of color get away. No, please don't cut me off. Get away with not being up to the standards that we expect. It's like a big family. I would never let my kids get away with the stuff that some people get away with. We have
Ma'am,
to bring that.
Go ahead, Bob.
I don't want to cut you off, but I have to ask you: have you ever been called a racist
until
now?
It makes sense. Instead of running our country into the ground, both morally and financially.
And did you hear what Bob said?
No.
Did you? And my question was: have you ever been called a racist before?
No.
Well, you have now. I'm sorry, but what you're saying is what I would regard as racist. And I'm sorry, Kathleen, to be so impolite, but I don't think that there's any other way to describe it.
Yeah, that's fine. It's fine. And is there an element of people who feel the way that Ann does? Well, obviously there must be among Donald Trump supporters, certainly those who have anti-Muslim sentiment.
I would think that I would hasten to say that that is probably a controlling feeling among many of the people. I won't say all of them, but certainly Donald Trump is pandering to that kind of feeling.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Reed in Shell Lake. Hi, Reed.
Hello. Thank you for your show today and your perspective. I was curious about a couple things that Mr. Franken said. One about Donald Trump supporters being largely upset at being sort of hoodwinked or led astray by the wealthier members of society. To me, that sounds like a straight-up Bernie Sanders pitch. And two, I was curious about the relationship that Mr. Franken mentioned with between Hillary and the leader of the DNC, saying that, you know, that debates were pitched on Saturday night so that they wouldn't have a high viewership. That seems deeply sort of suspect to me because, to me, if I really like a candidate, you know, for president, then, you know, I hope I have intelligent reasons behind that, hopefully, and I want the world to hear that candidate, that person who I really like, speak more, right? So, if I'm surprised that she could be backing someone and potentially not want that person's views.
Okay. Wait, and I'm sorry to cut you short, but we're almost out of time. We have about 30 seconds, Bob.
Okay. Real quickly, if a candidate is leading in the polls, the last thing that any astute politician wants to do is to be exposed to the perils of a political debate. That's number one. And number two, talking about the anger that most people feel in this country, it's not just Bernie Sanders who's speaking about that. It's Donald Trump and just about all of the candidates claiming, sometimes ludicrously, that they are the ones who can help the United States, help the people of the United States, the middle class particularly, get back some of the things that have been taken from them by the privileged few. So that is a campaign that is pretty much the campaign of everybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody even disputes that anymore. The question is, will they really deliver it?
Bob Franken, thank you so much for being with us, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Bob Franken, veteran journalist from Washington, worked for CBS, CNN, has a syndicated column, and we thank him for being with us. Got his start in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show and for on-air production.